The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Steve Cavanaugh. He joins us on the telephone in Boston. Welcome to the program, Steve. This is really an accomplishment to get you on the phone. I am so thrilled.
It's great to get talking to you, Vic, and thanks so much for everything. It's wonderful to be on WYSO.
You have a new book out. It's called Kill for Me, Kill for You. And I'm telling you, I read a lot of crime fiction, and I can't remember the last time I read a book that knocked me out of my chair like this one did. What an amazing story. How did you get the idea for this one?
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say that. This one, I've always been a big Hitchcock fan, and also a fan of Patricia Highsmith. And in recent years, there have been a few different sort of takes on classic sort of Hitchcock stories. Like The Girl in the Train was inspired by Rear Window. The Woman in the Window was also inspired by Rear Window. And I thought, well, there's other Hitchcock, you know, tales with great premises. And Strangers on a Train was always one of my favorites. And I was reading Patricia Highsmith's book on suspense. She wrote a little short volume on writing suspense, and in that she talks about Strangers on a Train and says she was never happy with this book. It was her first book, and it relies too much on coincidence, and if she had it back again, she would do it differently. She also said she was inspired by a story that appeared in Black Mask magazine. That's where she got the premise, and the premise is two strangers meet, and purely by chance, and they get to know each other a little bit, and they discover each one of them has someone they want to kill. But they can't kill this person because it's well known they dislike this other person, and they would be suspect number one if this person ever ended up dead. So they agree to swap murders. I'll kill the person you want dead, you kill the person I want dead. We've never met. I'll have an alibi when you commit the murder, and it's the perfect crime. So I thought that's a great premise, and you know, if Highsmith was happy enough to steal that premise from someone else, maybe I could too. So I was very much inspired by her Strangers on a Train. I wanted to take that premise and do my own thing with it. And there's another little Hitchcock short. It was the first short in his Hitchcock's Mystery Hour. It was a basic premise about revenge gone wrong, and I wanted to take those two stories and do my own versions of them.
Well, it's quite a delicious premise. It's Kill for Me, Kill for You by Steve Cavanaugh, who joins us on the phone in Boston. And our listeners are probably detecting just a slight bit of an accent. And you write a lot of books that are set in New York, and I'm wondering, how's a guy from Northern Ireland know so darn much about New York City?
Well, it's a bit of a trick, really. I think everyone, you know, basically almost everyone, I think, in the Western world knows about New York. You know, if you've seen Ghostbusters, if you've watched any, you know, Spider-Man movies, if you go back further than that, classic movies from the 70s, I think everyone has a very good mental picture of New York. So I cheat a little bit in that I don't have to spend, you know, three pages telling everyone what New York City looks like, because everyone already knows what it looks like. So I can very easily convey a good sense of the city. And the city suits the stories I like to tell. I like to tell fast-paced, suspenseful stories with high stakes, and that is the perfect setting for it. So, yeah, I wrote my first three books set in New York without ever having visited the United States. I've since been many times, but it's a city I love and a city I love writing about.
And you are known for a series featuring a guy named Eddie Flynn. Before we get into more of this new novel, which is a standalone, tell us about him.
Eddie Flynn used to be a con artist, and he then became a trial lawyer. And the series explores the fact there's not a great deal of difference between those two professions. All the great skills of a con artist are the skills that a really good trial lawyer should have: distraction, misdirection, persuasion. But Eddie will only represent people he believes are innocent. So whilst he has these considerable powers of persuasion, and he will walk, you know, a fine line when it comes to the law, and occasionally put both feet firmly over the line, he will only do that for the right reasons. The series explores the fact that in a biased justice system, sometimes it takes a dishonest man, a con man, to help balance those scales of justice into something more fair.
You've only been putting out books for about 10 years now, and I understand that you have a background as a con artist. I mean a lawyer.
You've got good sources. Yes, I was a civil rights lawyer. I also did criminal law as well, but I mostly did civil rights for about 20 years in Northern Ireland. And I came up with the idea for Eddie Flynn. I was basically cross-examining someone one day and kind of conned them into revealing that they were lying. And it was then that it occurred to me, hang on, you know, there's a lot of crossover here it's the psychological warfare and the control and manipulation, psychological manipulation that happens between a con artist and a mark. Same thing happens between a trial lawyer and a witness or a jury. So that seemed rich ground for me to explore, and that's how I got the idea for the Eddie Flynn series.
Mm. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Steve Cavanaugh. His new novel is Kill for Me, Kill for You. You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. Set this up for us, Kill for Me, Kill for You. You've got two main points of view, and then we've got a couple of sort of peripheral points of view. Tell us about how you structured this.
Well, one of the main points of view is a lady called Amanda, who has her daughter was tragically murdered. When we meet Amanda, she's lost her daughter and she's lost her husband, and she is going to kill the man who is responsible. The police believe very firmly they know exactly who did this, but they can't prove it. And Amanda can't live with that because she also knows and was basically told by the police, look, this is a very dangerous man and he could well do this again. So Amanda doesn't want, she does not want a mother to have to go through the pain that she has gone through. So she is out for revenge. And she is forced into a group therapy session. And in that group therapy session, she meets a woman called Wendy, who has also lost a loved one to violence and is also out for revenge. And over drinks one night, they get to know each other and they realize they have so much in common. And they also realize that they could potentially swap murders. And Amanda could kill the person that Wendy's targeting, and Wendy could kill the person Amanda's targeting. And that just might be the perfect murder. The other main point of view is Ruth, who is relatively recently married to Scott, and they have a pretty good life in a lovely brownstone in New York City until something terrible happens to Ruth one night, and she is the victim of violence. And their story explores how Ruth deals with that trauma, and also explores some aspects of toxic masculinity and how Scott deals with that trauma as well. And the sort of the connecting, the membrane between these two stories is Detective Farrow in the New York Police Department. He is investigating both the murder of Amanda's daughter, and he's also investigating what has happened to Ruth. And I wanted to write about real detectives in some ways, because I think real detectives spend more time with victims than perpetrators. And I wanted to write about that relationship. And Farrow is a detective who cares about the people that he comes into contact with. He has a nickname in the Department of St. Jude, patron saint of hopeless cases, because he can't let cases go until he solves them. So that's our basic setup for our story.
Excellent. And the detective's name is Farrow. We occasionally get his point of view. And we also get the point of view of Ruth's husband, Scott, occasionally. And when you mentioned Scott a moment ago, you also alluded to toxic masculinity. Are you referring to him?
Yes.
Okay.
I think sometimes this book explores trauma and different ways people react to trauma. And Scott is someone who has had some trauma in his life already, growing up. And when something happens to his wife, he feels very powerless and emasculated. But he's also very hungry for revenge. And in a way, the book explores aspects of that and how that happens, and not in a good way, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So the book explores all aspects of trauma and how some people can move on and some people cannot move on, how some people never want anyone to hurt like they hurt, and how some people want everyone to hurt like they hurt. So, and hopefully there is some... I think relief to the reader at the end of the novel, and that there is light and there's a way through all of this, and how people deal with grief and how grief affects us, but also how maybe we can move on.
I am not going to talk about the ending because you just absolutely... I had to check when I got to the end of the book to make sure my underwear was still on the right way. I mean, you just absolutely had me flipped out there at the end. And Scott, it's weird, you know, this toxic masculinity you referred to. I really like him, which kind of is worrisome to me that I like him and you're describing him in these terms.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're supposed to kind of like him, but you're also supposed to see that he's flawed.
Uh-huh.
This book is not filled with, black and white characters.
No.
What I wanted to do with the basic Strangers on a Train premise, the other issue which maybe I had with Strangers on a Train when I read it is, it's two people, these strangers who meet literally on a train and agree to swap murders, but they want to kill these people for their own purposes, you know. These are bad things. But I wanted the reader to meet two women, and these two women to want to kill someone, and for the reader to think, absolutely right. I think I would do the same thing. And for me to take the reader on that journey where they're rooting for someone to take revenge and break the law, and how far I could go with that.
Mm.
But again, some characters make mistakes, some characters go too far. So, yeah, I mean, it's okay to like Scott. It's okay not to like Scott as well.
Mm-hmm.
And same with all the characters, I do want people to have a mix of emotions with them. I think it makes them more real.
Definitely. Well, with Scott, he comes to the point where he has to make a decision, and he makes it very quickly. And as a reader, we're going, now, is that what I would decide? Because it's a big, big decision that he has to make. And I thought, yeah, I would probably do what he did. Because you just bring us right up against the wall on that one.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thanks very much. Yes, there's lots of decisions the characters make, and I do want the reader questioning themselves as they go along, thinking, would I do this?
Uh-huh.
And some readers, yes, may well do that. Some readers may back away from it, but they will understand why the characters have made those choices, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
I've done my job.
You have. My guest is Steve Cavanaugh. The book is Kill for Me, Kill for You, just coming out, and he's on a quickie book tour. They brought him over from Northern Ireland, and he's in Boston, and you're going to be in New York. I see you've got an event at the Mysterious Bookshop. I'm guessing you've been there before, and you know Otto. What a great guy, and what a great store.
It's an amazing store to visit. I get on really well with all the staff there as well, you know, Tom, Rob, all the guys there. It's a great store. I love doing events there. Last event I did there was with Lee Child. So I'm really looking forward to visiting the store this week and seeing a bit of New York as well.
Don't you have some kind of a crime book festival in Northern Ireland?
We did for a while. It was called Belfast Noir, which we ran for, I think it ran for a couple of years, but I think, you know, the pandemic kind of interrupted that. I don't think it has got back on its feet yet, but it would be nice to see But there are lots of great festivals in the UK in general, you know, all over the UK and Scotland and England. So, yeah, we like our crime fiction over there, too.
Well, I seem to recall that my buddy Robert Craze went over there one year for that festival. And I think, I don't know, were you doing a Q&A with him?
Yes, I interviewed Bob. Yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely lovely, lovely man.
Well, you just mentioned Lee Child.
An incredible writer.
You just mentioned Lee Child, and it reminded me. I think someone, maybe it was you, if there was a fight between Lee Child's Jack Reacher and Bob Craze's Joe Pike, who would win?
Yes. Yes, and I think Bob gave his standard answer that Joe Pike would triumph in that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't bring that up whenever I see Lee.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm sure Lee would have a very different view.
I love that. My guest is Steve Kavanaugh. I also understand that you're a big fan of James Lee Burke.
I am, yeah. I love his books. Love his books. He's an incredible writer. And again, another lovely, delightful man.
He really is. And I've interviewed him for, I think, his last 15 books in a row. And
wow.
He's an incredible guy. I can't believe how prolific he is.
I know. He's amazing. He's amazing. I'm reading his latest one, Cleat, at the moment.
I just finished that. What do you think?
Fabulous. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Don't you think it feels kind of valedictory?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, hopefully there's a lot more books to come, I think, from Mr. Burke. But I just love his writing, even on a granular level. Every sentence is a pleasure.
Mm, I agree.
And the characters are so rich.
Well, the whole Joan of Arc thing. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way, there's very, very few writers could pull that off.
Really?
You know, he's just, you know, and he mixes sometimes, he's very happy to mix the supernatural.
He really
is. With the real world as well, I think. And he's just, yeah, he's incredible, incredible writer. Big influence. Another friend of mine, John Connolly, and James E. Burke is a huge influence in his writing. Especially his Charlie Parker series as well. So I don't know if you're a John Connolly fan or not, but I would hardly recommend John's books.
Yeah,
there's a few of us. There's Adrian, there's Stuart Neville as well.
Mm-hmm.
He has a new one coming out this year from Soho Press, which is a great, great novel. So look out for that one when it comes out.
I am familiar with Stuart.
Yeah.
He's good.
So this one is slightly on the horror side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it. Put it this way, it was the closest reading experience I've had to reading Red Dragon, Thomas Harris's Red Dragon.
Oh, wow.
So it's very much, it is, you know, some people say it's horror, some people say it's thriller. I think in the same way some people would say Silence of the Lambs is horror or thriller. But I absolutely loved it. I think it's one of Stuart's best books. So, that's coming out. Blood Like Mine, is the title.
Blood Like Mine.
It's a great book.
My guest is Steve Kavanaugh, and his new one is Kill For Me, Kill For You. I'm curious, Steve, as someone who practiced law, and I understand that you won kind of a big case a number of years ago, and then you made the transition to being a writer. Was this something that you'd always dreamed of doing, to become a writer and to kind of set the law aside?
No, never really dreamed of it. It was a sort of a dream I had when I was much younger. I kind of wrote screenplays when I was about 18 or 19. I wrote a few screenplays, managed to get an agent, but never got anything sold. And when I was about 20 or 21, I gave it up and didn't write anything then until I was about 35. And my mum passed away quite suddenly, and she was the only person who ever encouraged me to write.
Mm.
So I thought, well, life's very short. I should maybe have a go at writing a book. Because when I was younger, I didn't think I could write a book. So I started writing my first novel, the Eddie Flynn novel, The Defense, and I wrote it as a book that I thought that my mum would like. And that's how I started writing. But there was never any grand plan of you know, I didn't even know if it was going to be published. All I wanted to do was get it published and get it in the bookstore. But then I got a 3-book deal from the UK for my first book. So I thought, okay, well, maybe write another two and see if I can learn how to do this. And then gradually it worked out. I wrote a book called 13, which was my fourth novel. The other three books were all got great reviews and they're all nominated for awards, but they didn't sell very well. But I wrote a book called 13 about a serial killer who gets his way onto a jury in a murder trial. And that book sold incredibly well all over the world and changed my life and continues to change my life as it comes out in different territories. So that, you know, gave me the opportunity to quit the law and to write full time. And my wife basically said that I think you should do that, because I was working as a full time lawyer with a young family and then writing at night. So there wasn't much sleeping happening. So she was absolutely right to make that call and never look back.
It sounds like you were writing the Eddie Flynn's. You were getting great reviews, but they weren't selling like you hoped. And then you wrote this other book. I assume 13's a standalone?
No, that's an Eddie Flynn.
It's an Eddie Flynn, too? Okay. I need to read that.
The way I work is, Kill For Me, Kill For You is a total standalone book. But I sort of look at all my Eddie Flynn novels as standalones. When I started off writing, I sort of looked at that, because there are some brilliant writers like Lisa Jewell or Charlie Pena who will write standalone thrillers, like Linwood Barclay, Harlan Coben. And then there's the writers who do the series, you know, like Michael Connelly and Lee Child. And I admired all those writers, and I thought, well, why can't I do both? So all of my Eddie Flynn books work as standalones, and they all have high concept ideas. So 13's a serial killer on trial, serial killer on a jury. 50-50, which may be coming out in the States at some stage, is about two sisters who are on trial for, they're both accused of murdering their father, and they accuse each other. And it's a question of who you believe. What would happen if you found out your husband was a serial killer and you were accused of being his accomplice? So they all work as high concept sort of hooks, but they all work within a series and you can read them in any order.
Nice. And what are there, like 10 of them now? Or
The new one is the eighth book. It's called Witness 8. That will be out in the States next year from Atria. That one is about, again, I'm always asking myself, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, who would be the worst person to witness a murder? So Witness 8 takes place in a very high-end, exclusive residential street in New York City. You know, it's sort of Millionaire's Row, this street. And there is a young girl called Ruby Johnson who used to live in the street but doesn't anymore. She works as a maid and a housekeeper and a nanny for various families in the street. And she's walking home one night. She sees one of the neighbors being murdered. And she knows he was murdered, and she knows who the killer is. And she makes an anonymous call to the police, but she doesn't give them the name of the murderer. She gives them the name of an innocent man, because there is something very wrong with Ruby Johnson. And the book explores then what happens after that, as Eddie gets called in to defend this innocent person, and we realize that Ruby is more dangerous and more twisted than the real killer.
Nice. My guest is Steve Cavanaugh. We're talking about his new standalone. It's called Kill For Me, Kill For You. And I've interviewed a lot of writers from England, Scotland, Ireland. And I found that some writers, like you look at Lee Child, I think of him as a British writer. Yet he sets his Reacher novels in the U.S. and he's really, really popular over here and everywhere. And then you have someone like Ian Rankin, who is huge over there, but I don't think he sells quite as well over here as maybe he deserves to sell. I look at someone like Peter James, who is huge over there, and I don't even think they're releasing his stuff over here now. What is it about the U.S. market? You've obviously figured it out, because you're setting a lot of your stuff over here.
Yeah, but I'm not sure it works, even works in setting. It's just it's a weird thing. You know, we talked about James Lee Burke, Many crime writers would say, you know, he's probably the best writer working today. But James Lee Burke doesn't sell, you know, massively in the UK, which again is very strange. And there are lots of amazing, you know, American writers whose work doesn't get the justice it deserves in the UK, and they're not as well known. And I don't know why. It can be a weird thing. It can be a publisher thing. It can be just sometimes a bookseller thing. I don't know. But I've given up trying to understand publishing. All I do now is write the best books I can and give it to my agent, John Wood, and then he sorts it all out.
You mentioned your wife a few moments ago. I'm getting the feeling that she's your first reader and that she's very important to the process.
She is incredibly important. She's a brilliant, brilliant reader and a brilliant editor. So she will read all, I'll write a draft, probably a second draft she'll read. She'll give me great pointers. You know, she'll come up with some ideas for twists. She'll just go through everything forensically and give me, you know, tell me where I've missed something or where she doesn't understand something or here's something we could do that's better. Plus, we also discuss the books before I start writing, and sometimes she'll have, you know, better ideas than I do, and I just go and write that.
Wow.
So she's amazing, really lucky to have Tracy. She's fantastic and a huge part of all of this.
Well, looking at your bibliography, it sounds like you put out about a book a year at this rate.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been lucky to be able to do that. So far, so good.
And do you sign multiple book deals? I know you were on Flatiron and now you're on Atria. How does that work?
I to be honest, I have no idea. John handles all of this, John Wood at RCW, but I sometimes, you know, you switch publishers. It happens in publishing sometimes. But I think, you know, Flatiron are still, you know, very valiantly selling my backlist in America, and long may that continue.
Sure.
And I have a, you know, great new relationship now with Atria, so I'm really excited for them. I have another book coming out with them next year, Witness 8. The UK, I've signed up to multiple books there, so. And same in Germany, and I've lost count. I think I'm translated now into 32 languages. And they're all coming out at different times and different book sites. So I was in Barcelona this year, and then I was in Amsterdam this year, and it's only March. And they were all for different books. So, I don't know exactly how it works or how it all comes out, but I'm just very, very lucky to be in it and to be published and to be read, and I count my blessings.
Well, Steve, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about your new book.
It's been great fun. Thank you so much, Vic. I've really enjoyed it. I've really had a good time.
The book is Kill for Me, Kill for You, and I cannot give it high enough praise. I absolutely love this book. And Steve, I can't wait for the next one. Thanks again.
Thanks so much, Vic. An absolute pleasure to talk to you.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO for The Book Nook. I'm Vic McInnes.